lazily redefine things on the command line like that, which is a pain. Can you have access in the config files into that? Yeah, people have asked me for that before. I may add it. I'm just a little bit worried about adding, download some code and run it on your version. It won't work because you've changed it. And then for someone to make it portable, they have to check. Have you turned on this stupid flag that breaks PHP? If so, well, then we have to do things differently. Right? So we're trying to keep the number of config file options that significantly change the behavior of PHP to a minimum. We have stuff, but if I add another one like this,
there are implementations like Beacon and PHP that we have. We run in our code on a separate PHP to Beacon that we run someone else's code, so that's
right.
For us, and there's a lot
of right. So the comment was that, I mean, you have your own, you can have your own quite a bit different from the public version of PHP in many areas. I've broken many, many things for performance reasons. So a lot of stuff you download won't work very well at all on the Yahoo platform, which is also sort of on purpose. I don't want my Yahoo guys downloading random stuff and just putting it up on yahoo.com, because we'd be hacked in about 3 seconds if they did that. All right, so with this iteration, yeah, the question of why you'd want to do it, honestly, I can't give you a really solid answer of why you'd want to do it. People do it, and when you wrap things in classes like this, it can be really useful to be able to directly iterate through it. And you can also override all these iterators, which is where, actually. And you can implement that interface yourself if you want to. So you can create a my iterator, and then you can overload all of these. So it was rewind, current, key, next, and valid. So if we apply this, so I use the actual iterator here, we can see what's getting called, because in each case I printed out the function that's being called, right? So rewind current, key, next, and valid. So I'm going through my array here. The first thing it does, it rewinds the pointer to the beginning pointer. And basically, it's calling all these methods that I added. And you can play with this yourself a little bit, define your own iterators if you really want to. Honestly, you probably shouldn't be messing around with the iterators and defining your own iterators over classes. You can also, if you say, well, I don't want to redefine all this of a certain name, skip it, or skip twice or something. I mean, whatever. You can also aggregate, you can use the iterator aggregate class. And that means, so instead of implementing here, sorry, I'm scrolling you up and down. Instead of implementing iterator, you can implement iterator aggregate. And then you only need to define iterator aggregate instead. Again, I don't have a really good example of why you want to do this. Most of this is in here because there's a bunch of crazy Germans that really want to turn PHP into Java. And we've been resisting and we've been implementing things that make sense for PHP, and we could do what people do with it. You can do some magic. Controlling cloning. Remember we said there's a new way to deep copy objects in PHP 5 with the clone keyword? You can go in and do a fix-up on that clone. So if you, for example, have an object that had second copy, maybe you want each object to have a different connection to it. And if you just deep copy it, it's going to have the same connection, basically. It's just going to have one connection open. Perhaps you want separate connections. So you'd have to run a fix-up. And you can define a method called underscore underscore clone, and that will get called when you do the clone. It doesn't override the internal clone in the sense that it'll still with a static property here. I say static instances equals zero. So here I'm saying this instance equals plus plus self instances, right? So I'm basically counting the number of instances, and I'm setting the instance, which is a public property, non-static, I'm setting that too. And here's where you sort of see the interplay between the static properties that are tied to the class itself versus the public properties which are associated with the instances of the classes, right, with the objects. So we have three distinct things here. We have an object called test. Right? My class 3 contains a static property called instances. That's sort of the counter that counts how many times this class has been instantiated. And obviously, if you only use new, then we can count it here. But this wouldn't work without this clone. It's already assumed that the constructor has been called on it. It's a properly instantiated object already. We can just deep copy the whole thing, take a copy. So if you wanted to have something like this where you count the number of instances, you'd have to do it like this. Questions on that one? All right. Comparing objects. Double equals and triple equals. We all know the difference between double equals and triple equals in PHP? Do they? No? Never seen the triple equals? Okay, so for normal things, forget about object orientation in PHP, string 0 and the integer 0. If you say, if $A equals $B, that's going to be true. Because we don't care about types when we're doing this. PHP is a web-oriented language. Everything that comes in as strings. Right? When you hit submit in a browser, we don't know if a field is. In order to not make this whole web programming a real pain in the ass, we made the double equal comparison not care. So if you have an age field, you put in 21, you can say if age is less than 21, do something, and it'll just work. Right? You shouldn't care that this came in as a string. Equals A equals B, that would be false if the types were different. One is 0 as an integer, the other is 0 as a string, that returns false. So that's what the triple equals stuff does. You also have not equals equals, this is a negated version of that, right? And you have all the different ones as strict equality. 4, and it has changed slightly in PHP 5. So, say we have this instance here. We say A equals new some class, B equals A, so we have a reference to A. There's A and B are basically exactly the same thing. Then I clone A twice, put one copy in C, put another, turn off one thing. I have xdebug enabled right now, which I don't want. Sorry, one second. Reload my slide. In the double equal sense. Yeah, A and B are both referencing the same object. They've got to be equal. Same thing for triple equals. It's exactly the same object, just with different names. It's going to say it's equal. Is A equal to C? In the double equal sense, it is. It's not exactly the same object. So the same, so we're going to say, yes, it's the same. It's not quite the same, but from sort of just looking at it, yes, it's the same. With the triple equal sense, that's going to return false because A and C are not the same instance. They're different instances of the same object, but they're different. So that's where the triple equals returns false. Change the property in D. So we have different instances and the contents are different. Now it's false, and obviously the triple equals is not going to work because both it's not the same instance and the contents are different. Okay? Right, so the comment is triple equals for non-objects has not G and applied the same consistent logic to OO, which we didn't have before. We weren't able to make this consistent. I don't even know what this did in PHP 4 because we never really thought about comparing objects. We fixed this in PHP 5 and made it consistent with what you would expect. For use. Which makes me wonder why we spent time implementing it. But there are some uses for it, and it's kind of cool to play around with. So what we have is we have this reflection API, and we have a reflector interface as well. Reflection exception, function, parameter, method, things, and see what's in there. Let me show an example. So I have defined a class. My test class has a public property var1, private property var2, has a constructor. That's it. So a very simple little class. Now, I can call this, so I use the reflection class of whatever. So reflection, colon, colon, export, new reflection class, and then the class name that I want to poke. And let's see what comes up. So this is what the reflection class spat out for my test class. It looks through it. It figures out where the class is defined. Normally, this would be a script name. It's saying it's eval code. It's not coming from a script file directly. It's eval code that contains this my class, my test class. It has no constants, has no static properties, has no static methods, right? It figures out that we have two properties, a public property called var1, a private, it's allowed to prod and poke you like this. The whole point of the reflection API is to do things like auto generation of whistles, for example, for web services, so you can really sort of do introspection and look at things and see what's in this class. How does it work? What methods does it have? What properties does it have? How can we build a whistle file to access this web service? Again, you'd probably use someone else's tool that did this via the reflection API, or you use a whistle generation tool from somebody else, or you might be the one crazy guy that decides to implement this tool, and then you need the reflection API. But on your own, in your own scripts, just sort of for the heck of it, I don't think you would ever need the reflection API. Or if you do, you need to reevaluate what the hell you're doing. So, question from the front here. Is there something you could put in a class to stop reflection from finding out about whatever? No. Just like, I mean, this is a scripting language, right? People can open up the file and just read your damn class. Stuff like that, you should be writing it in C, anyway. Okay, we could use reflection to look at ourselves. Right, we can go in and poke the reflection class method, the reflection class class itself. So if we look inside the reflection to dump out this output that we see, there's a public property called name, and then there's these various other ones. There's a bunch of private methods, well, one private method is called clone, and then a bunch of public methods. So these are the various things that you can prod and see directly. So instead of just what line number in that file does the class definition start at? So IDEs, for example, might very well use this to prod and see, hey, this particular class, when I want to debug it, here's the file I need to load, here's the line I need to zoom down to in order for this IDE to start debugging at that point. So start line, end line, even extract documentation for a specific class via this. Fetch the constructor, check if it has various methods, properties, constants, interfaces, abstract, all the various stuff you can pull out of it. We also saw this reflector interface. I was like, okay, well, let's see reflector. And it tells us this is our interface called reflector. And it basically wants a two-string and there's a static property exploit in there. So there's just one method in there called toString. The exception class, we talked about that earlier, about how when you do a try catch, you get an exception, and the exception is an instance of this internal exception class. You can use reflection to poke it and see, hey, what's actually in there? What are the different things that I can get out of the reflection class that the exception occurred in? You can get the line number. There's a private trace property and a private string property. So we have access functions to get those things. So there's a get trace method that you can call that will give you the function trace. So the set of function calls that led up to that exception happening. So you can then throw out this function called by that function. So you can sort of exactly see how you got to that exception being thrown. So I think get trace returns an array, and then get trace as string is sort of a pretty printed version of it if you need to just print it directly, if you don't want to iterate through the array and build the look yourself. Deploying stuff with reflection, you probably wouldn't need it. So at the tools level, it's useful. The deployment, not so much. Yeah.
Is there any one of the reflections to do more than just look at once?
Well, I mean, reflection, you can do all, you can call it and then ask it if it has a certain class or which arguments this class takes. So you could do something that, obviously, I mean, you should know if the method's there, or if you don't, there should be a call override in there or something, right? You shouldn't have to use reflection to do stuff like that. It sort of defeats the purpose of the whole OO model of doing things. But people will still do it, right? And you can, but if it is, great, use it. All right. Finally, escaping from the object orientation a little bit. Strings and filters were added in PHP 4.3, so you should be somewhat familiar with them already. Everything in PHP works through a stream these days. So when you do a read file, for example, and you put HTTP, whatever, so you do a remote read file, it goes through this HTTP wrapper. And we have different types of wrappers. So you can put read file, bracket, quote, FTP, colon, blah, whatever. You can do an fopen using compressed zlib as the thing. And you can read directly from a compressed file or write directly to a compressed file and just do an fgets. You get the uncompressed string and you can put s back the uncompressed string. But since it goes through the wrapper, the file on disk, it's all going to be compressed. So it's a way of accessing things across this wrapper. In a sense. So you could write 13 something as it's going across, right? You can uppercase it, lowercase it, strip tags away from it, define your own conversion functions. You do a use definable function that says, for every character that's flowing across this wrapper, do this. Or for every stream of characters, do something to them. And then we have our transports, which is the actual lower level protocol. So TCP, UDP, Unix. Unix would be a Unix domain socket. For example, UDG, SSL, V2, V3, and TLS. So all this stuff can also happen. So, some examples. Initially, data is flowing across it. Opening a file for write using the compressed zlib wrapper. So I'm directly opening a file called foo-bar.txt.gz, and I can then fput stuff to it, and I'll get a compressed file at the end of it. As I'm going. Reading a file over HTTPS, socket level stuff over SSL, just by manipulating this socket at this point that I've opened. Some other examples of sort of the concept of streams, in that if I open up a file, a remote file, example.com, so the index of example.com gets opened up in read mode here, so if I get two file pointers here, do a stream copy to stream that says take stuff from the first stream, copy it to the second stream, and the third optional argument is how many bytes. So here I'm saying take the first 1024 bytes from source, write it to dest1, right? So my first 1k dot a number of bytes here, then I'll just until the end of the stream, right? So the rest of the file, Dan switched outlets. Okay. So I write the rest of the stream to remainder.txt in this case. Don't have to think about it too much. So you can just open up stuff in SSL and not think about the underlying encryption that's happening there. It's all happening beneath the surface. This assumes that you compile PHP with OpenSSL support, of course. Without OpenSSL, that won't work. How are we doing time wise? 5 minutes. Okay. Install it. Pair install SQLite should work. SQLite is basically SQL for flat files. It's not a real SQL database. It can't replace a real SQL database on a large scale. But on a small scale, instead of fiddling around with text files, SQLite is a hell of a lot here. Sorry, this is my little slide trick that removes my temporary file from my last presentation. So you open up a temp file, ld.bdb, create a table in it, insert some values, send off a query, fetch the results, and print it out. And all my slides are live, so whenever we see a yellow p.db, we can go have a look at it. No, we can't. Why not? Did I lie? Okay. Sorry? LB file, obviously. So SQLite manages these files, but the entire database is contained within one file. So you can move them around, copy them around, copy them from across platforms as well. It should work. Little endian, big endian, I don't think it cares. And it's just kind of a nicer way of doing file manipulation. It handles all the locking issues as well, full database for it. Not very. On the small site, sure. I mean, less than 1 million hits a day, no problem. But 1 million hits is nothing, right? No, it's not. That's absolutely nothing. In the web sense, that means you can take 300 milliseconds, 200 milliseconds to serve up a request. You can do a lot of stuff in 200 milliseconds, right? I need at Yahoo, I need my request to finish in about 15 milliseconds. Anything slower than that, forget it. SQLite format, I don't know. You saw the beginning of the file, right? It had LB. Why did I call it LB? You saw it had this. Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, can you deploy this real database? Yeah, just don't expect it to scale. Whenever you do something, you have a current requests hitting your site. One guy does a read. You have 99 waiting for that guy's read to finish before they can do anything, read or write. So, I mean, like I said, it handles the locking for you. I don't think will block, but the query, whenever you try to do something, reading from it or writing to it, you will be blocked at this point. But on the initial connection function, often it's a third-party library call that we can't really control because the connection is happening too deep, little things like that. Most third-party things these days, and we've actually requested some of them to provide us with a way of specifying the timeout. So most on web services.
Objects that they're passed by reference?
Yeah, only for
objects. Only for objects, okay. That solves that one. Okay. Convert.star, the streams that you were talking about.
Right.
You can specify
your
own function.
You can do
function.
Your own user-defined functions to do the conversion.
Okay.
I'm running an object to
You can extend it from two different topics. You can also, two interfaces, you can extend it to classes. So you could, in the constructor, you can do something interesting.
That's probably it, right? So if I switch to another application. Right. It's actually on this.
Yeah. I'm certainly there, so I'm not missing it so much at the moment, having come from sort of using KDE.
Yes, but to me, just this.
How do you handle application variables across multiple servers? The ASP?
What's only on one server?
And how's it just?
Or how we use it in ASP is just that multiple.
The best method would be just to store it.
It has to be a little bit tricky how to do some of these things across different platforms. So we had trouble with it. We also had some critical reasons not to put them in. But we'll work through it soon. But if you're just looking for this particular feature, don't mind installing APC. APC will speed up your code along. It's PHP 4
equals revenues 0.01.
On my PHP 5 here, we type PHP eyes, PHP 4. And then make install. that goes for any Packer extension. That's how you build anything from Packer. PHP eyes, no PHP stuff.
So
back-end libraries
with the dangerous functions.
Yeah, this one's the one you find.